Today is Tuesday, May 28th, and you're listening to The Job. This is The Job, a talk show about design, music, business, culture, and Portland. I'm your host, Ray Briglib. Our guest on episode 15 this week is Marjorie Skinner. First, let's talk to Candace. Hi, Candace.
Hello, Ray.
How are you doing this lovely Tuesday?
Yeah, it's really nice. I always get a little bit thrown off by Memorial Day. Long weekend. And
any Monday holiday throws me off because I come in kind of off step, you know? So it breaks my stride.
Really? I come in pretty fired up.
Oh, that's good.
But then I realize that I have all of these ideas, but I only have 4 days in which to accomplish them.
Yeah.
And that's the part that gets me feeling a little crazy.
How exciting to be you. So filled with wonder and ideas.
Probably has a lot to do with coming back after a three-day weekend and then last night thinking, oh, wow, there's a lot to do this week.
Right.
And then
right.
It just starts running through the head and have it all.
Well, I had the rare pleasure of not thinking much about work over our three-day weekend, largely because I could not think about work because I couldn't get online.
Did you try?
Yeah.
Did you want to?
Yeah, I couldn't.
See, this is how we vacation differently. The minute we hit the coast, I make it as hard as possible for myself to do. Like, I'll hide the mail app on my phone. I'll put it on the last screen, and I'll take it out of the dock. Do, like, everything I can.
See that big red number moving up?
No numbers. This is the first time I accidentally looked at it. I saw 29, and that was, you know, still Friday.
Now, are you using regular mail app now?
I'm using the mail app that comes with my iPhone.
So
I trust Apple to give me the best mail app possible.
Usually I think ahead a little more, and like you can download movies onto the iPad beforehand so that when you're at the coast, you can watch them.
You don't have to watch the penguin movie over. What was that movie called?
Happy Feet. Well, all the movies there just sucked. You know, it's like all the movies, you know, when you get to those places, it's super, super nice of them to make those available.
Manzanita. But you know, we were in Manzanita.
But you know that those are all the movies that nobody has stolen yet. You know,
like, I did not think of it like that.
That's how I look at those collections. It's like, these are all of the not great movies because people just slowly over time, you know, a movie here, a movie there. Oh, I love this movie.
Great part about vacation is watching bad movies, playing board games, going for walks. Yep. I mean, it's, you know, it's a different pace than the city. And I would say, more than any short vacation we've ever had, we really got into the pace of vacation. Just like, even though it was rainy, it was Oregon coast, hiking every day, getting out.
Yeah.
Naps, long naps.
It was nice.
Charcuterie and rosé in the afternoon. I mean, this was a good one. So I am always, we stopped by the cheese bar before leaving town.
Yes.
And we basically asked them to just put together a care package of wine and treats. I think that was the secret. I felt well cared for. Like everything was chosen.
Yeah.
Chosen well.
And the wine went with the food. You know, on the subject of this podcast, I don't know if I'll have the transcription ready in time. It occurred to me that I was going to submit it before the weekend. It usually takes a day or two for our service to provide them. I just got the one from last week back. It's like, it depends if it's like we talked for a long time with Mike Squires, and so that one took a while. It's been a challenge. You kind of have to set aside a week to have people transcribe your interview. But
where are you going with this?
Well, it's probably still a good idea to do it.
Yeah, you know, it costs money,
it takes time and everything, but
I love the transcriptions. I end up sometimes reading those before I have the chance to actually listen to the podcast. And I still end up listening to the podcast, but there are times when I find myself just wanting to read a bit.
Well, yeah, I guess where I'm going from this is I wanted all of our lovely listeners to know that if you visit the website, you can read the whole transcription these days of our interviews, which are great if you want to like share some of the stuff that we're talking about or whatever. But also that we're redesigning those pages, so they should be more useful. Now, we were trying to come up with something where you could have the player floating in the right margin, so as you're scrolling down reading the interview, you can be listening to it too.
We will come up with something that does that.
Isn't that exciting, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Redesigns are always exciting, especially, well, I mean, we're spending a year redesigning our site, so it's fun to take a month and pick one portion and really do that well, bring it into the world.
We've been falling behind a little bit. We've been tardy with our deadlines, but we're getting there.
Talk to the project manager.
Marjorie's been with the Portland Mercury almost as long as the Portland Mercury has. She has gone all the way from an internship to editor-in-chief. She writes columns, reviews, editorials. She also finds the time to contribute to their blog. And if you've been to the annual Mercury Fashion Show, you've seen Marjorie's work as well. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm pretty well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I actually prefer the rain, so I'm thrilled. This is great.
I think this is my first authentically stupid outfit of the year that I wore, a mini skirt and wedge sandals for like the rainiest day we've had.
That's okay. I saw a buddy recently and he asked if my shoes were prescription, so boy. Ouch. Ouch.
Burn.
Yeah. That's rough. I mean, I went along with it, but inside I was crying. So where are you originally from?
I grew up in Moss Beach, which is a small, as the name implies, beach town just south of San Francisco. Very, very small.
Okay. How did you end up in Portland?
I went to Reed College.
Okay. For?
Oh, I studied English literature.
Okay.
I had never heard of Reed. And then when I was a freshman in high school, this guy that I had a crush on, who was a senior, was doing his college search. And he was kind of like, you know, like a cool, creative stoner dude. And he was like, oh, you know, you'll really like Reed. You should check it out. And I always just kind of kept it in mind, and then when it came time for me to do my college search, I checked it out, and actually my first choice was NYU, but I was like, well, Reed's pretty cool, actually. I agree with that guy. And my dad wouldn't let me apply to NYU.
Too far away, or?
He just hated New York.
Okay.
He actually told me, this is so terrible that he said this to me, but he actually said, you will get raped every day on your way to school and then raped again on your way home.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He loves that way, though.
Yeah, that's okay. God, I don't even want to go to New York now. So how did you end up at the Mercury?
I honestly just kind of fell into it. I graduated and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but I thought it made sense to use my career, and kind of the obvious path would have been to go into teaching, but that didn't really appeal to me. I didn't really see myself as a teacher, which left a big question mark. But I was really open-minded and just kind of excited to see where my life was going to go. And I was kind of open to any suggestions. And my boyfriend at the time was a musician. So the Mercury was always around our house. And he was like, well, you know, the Mercury's cool. Why don't you go see if you can do something there? And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. I just walked in the front door and I said, hey, I just graduated from Reed with an English degree. Do you have anything I can do? And they were like, well, you can apply for an internship. So I did, and I got the internship, and That was only a year after the paper had started. So it was an even smaller company than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
So partly because of that, it was only a couple months before they hired me part-time. And the other half of my time, I was working, jockeying a register at Borders downtown. And then after about a year or maybe a little more than that of working part-time for them, they hired me full-time. And then I just kind of kept jumping up the ladder from there.
Yeah. As an aside, were you sad to see Borders go?
Not really. I was deeply embarrassed at the time of working there. You know, a lot of my friends were like anti-corporate, like activist types. And so I was
like, maybe if you'd worked at Powell's, it would have been okay.
Oh, it would have been. So, and I applied to Powell's, but of course everybody applies to Powell's. I didn't get a job at Powell's.
I applied to Powell's at one point. Yeah.
Yeah. I actually went to like huge lengths to keep it secret from a lot of people that I was even working at Borders, which I don't know, it's incredibly manipulative, but, but it frankly wasn't that bad because when I started there, it was really chill and I worked at the register. That's all I did. And I worked like the slowest shifts. I worked Sundays and Mondays. It was like, I don't even remember what my other one was, but it was like evenings and like Sundays was really slow and Monday was kind of busy, but not really. So I just read at the counter most of the time. It was actually pretty sweet. But by the time I left, like corporate had started like sending all these douchebags down the line. And it was like, they always wanted you to be doing this like obnoxious busy work. And, you know, it was one of those situations where I like was really hating it. And I don't know. I mean, I decided I was quitting on my walk to work one day and then I quit on my lunch break and I was like, I was over it. I didn't have any sympathy for them.
Yeah. My fondest memories of Borders were that there was one in where I grew up in White Bear Lake, and we used to have shoplifting competitions. So just stealing books from the man. So Borders was good for that. There was the very lax security, and it was fun, you know. You've been at the Mercury for probably 12 years. Is that right?
I think it will be, good God. Yeah, it'll be 12 years in July.
Okay.
June or July.
And so what is your title now?
I'm the managing editor.
Okay. And what does that mean?
Typically in most newspaper environments, it just means that you're literally managing the day-to-day operations of the editorial department. And I do a lot of that. You know, it's dealing with personnel issues. I'm often involved in hiring decisions. Unfortunately, sometimes I'm involved in layoff decisions, although that has happened only once in the history of our department.
Mm-hmm.
I deal with our freelance budget and kind of argue for and defend our spending in that regard to the publisher.
Okay.
But because it's a small company, I wear a ton of different hats. I also write a fashion and retail column. I've always been one of the main film critics at the paper. I still do some low level data entry. Mm-hmm. I still help like enter the film times at the back of the paper.
Wow.
And copy edit and all kinds of stuff.
So I always imagine, and I like to glamorize other people's jobs, which is probably why this podcast is so fascinating to me. But I imagine that the newsroom at the Mercury is like Saturday Night Live, and like there's like the there's like the rush to get to the press and everything. Is that what it's? Is it really exciting? Is there like a Lorne Michaels figure there?
Well, William Stephen Humphrey, the editor-in-chief, is quite a character, and it's important to remember that his first love is theater.
Okay.
His undergraduate degree is in theater, and he, especially if there's like a new intern, you know, we have these weekly editorial meetings where we talk about, everybody kind of goes around and discusses what they're putting into their various sections for the next issue. He's hilarious and like super inappropriate all the time. And he kind of likes to showboat a little bit. So there is a certain level of ridiculousness that goes on in our office, and it's very creatively free, and a lot of eccentric people work there, but it's less of like, stop the presses, like, right. You know what I mean? Like, our news, literal newsroom is an office that two people and an intern share. Not that interns aren't people, but you know what I mean?
I love that.
And they actually weirdly, by some mutual agreement, always have the lights off, so it's hard to even know. You kind of have to, and it's like got glass walls on the outside, so you kind of have to like peer in to like see if anybody's even in there. So they're actually kind of chill.
Maybe they get the breaking news better if it's dark, you know?
It's got to be some psychological thing that they decided was to their benefit.
Huh.
Maybe they can just see their monitors better. I don't know.
It really is sounding a lot like Saturday Night Live in the 70s. It doesn't seem like the... It's hard to tell from the outside how the Mercury has changed. It seems like the publication hasn't changed as much as the extracurricular activities. Like, it seems like now a lot of the stuff that you and the Mercury do are really interesting, like the fashion week that you just did and stuff like that. How has that changed over the years with the Mercury? And
I mean, we've always done and have wanted to do as much as we can events out in the community. Mm-hmm. I mean, just from a purely business standpoint, it's good marketing for us. And really, like, it would be great if it was a moneymaker for us, but we're not really there. I mean, Hump is really profitable, the amateur porn festival in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, there have been fashion shows that I've done that have made money, but I've also lost money on them. It's mostly a marketing thing and to just stay involved in the community. It's also, these events come out of things that the people who work there are passionate about. And, you know, people who work in our editorial department are really living a lifestyle where they're entrenched in everything that they're covering. I mean, we go to the events, like, we know all these people, like, we socialize with them. Like, it's really a lifestyle kind of job, and it's a passionate interest that you never entirely clock out of. So a lot of times it's just a natural extension anyway. Like, I was going to get involved in fashion shows anyway. I'm already involved in fashion shows outside of the Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I work on content at the Ace Hotel. That happens on October. Last year it happened in November. I was going to get into that kind of stuff anyway, just as a byproduct of of being interested in what I'm interested in. So we just kind of try to make it all dovetail and just break even. Mm-hmm. Really.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like a podcast too.
Used to do a podcast.
Yeah. I wasn't aware that you didn't anymore.
No. I mean, that's one of the things that kind of, when we had to do our belt tightening, like everybody else, after the economic hoo-ha, whatever.
Right.
That's one of the things that was just like kind of a time and resource suck that we decided we couldn't afford to do anymore. But
yeah, it is.
You know, we might bring it back though.
The problem, did you guys ever make mugs for your podcast?
Maybe that was that the was problem.
Because that's when it takes off. So is it safe to say that one of your big passions is fashion?
Kind of. I mean, yes and no. I mean, I was always interested in clothing, particularly shoes. I always read fashion magazines growing up. I read Veronica and Betty and Veronica, the comics. I read that for the clothes, pretty much. You know, but I had never thought about it having anything to do with my career. It was just that when I was in that part-time position at the Mercury, you know, I was really gaming for a full-time thing and just trying to figure out a way to make myself indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody pretty much had the usual categories covered. You know, we already had a music editor, we already had a film person, theater, la-da-da, all these other things. And this was also at the same time that, like, Seaplane was doing all these great shows and they were starting to pick up national attention and, you know, a little bit of buzz. And I just made the argument that it didn't make sense for us to be covering all of the other local arts so thoroughly and be completely ignoring these really exciting things that were happening in indie design that, you know, other magazines were talking about. Venus was doing a feature, you know, it just, it didn't make any sense. So Steve just let me run with it. And I do still really love clothes, but I kind of can't not, like, take a more intellectual approach to it than that. And what I'm really interested in is localized manufacture and what kind of products are indicative of certain places. And it's almost like a social anthropology fascination for me.
Interesting. How has that aspect of like design, like fashion in Portland changed over the years? I mean, it seems like there's people like the Portland Garment Factory and stuff.
Yeah, it's been great. Portland's actually, I mean, for its size, you know, we're kind of, we're doing awesome in terms of like the actual quality of designs, the originality that's happening here. In terms of our boutiques, I mean, Portland has like completely exploded. We have world-class boutiques here and far more of them than you would think we could handle. And, you know, we lose a few of them every year, but not as many as we gain, which is crazy. And definitely we're towards the head of the pack when it comes to starting to build real infrastructure for people to be able to have their designs locally manufactured. It's, I mean, it's really cool. It's just
interesting. Do you think that, do you see that continuing? Do you think that there's like a, I mean, I noticed when you started your response, you started with for its size, which is what, something that a lot of people say about Portland, you know, like you got to excuse, you know, this is Portland, but like, do you think that can continue? Do you think that it'll continue to grow or that it's kind of like, it's like hit some kind of limit here?
You know, I really hope so. I feel like people have, as for as long as they've been saying, oh, for its size, like Portland still has that little hesitancy and a little bit of self-consciousness. But look how long we've been going. It hasn't hit its wall yet. And I mean, I don't know if you've heard about this Union Way project, the so-called Alley project that's going there. It's going to, I don't think it will probably be like completely done until like August, but it's this huge retail and food kind of, it's like one of those like indoor flea market type spaces that you see in Europe where you know, it's like a little bit smaller than that. It's where Aura used to be, as well as the Red Cap. It's like that block Living Room Theater is. It's like still under construction right now, but it's like this other huge retail piece that's going down, and it's right, you know, in the heart of the so-called West End part of downtown. It's, you know, just spitting distance from the Black Box, which is another huge thing. And that just went in a couple years ago. So, I mean, it seems like it's still going, you know, I can't really predict if it's going to keep on going, but I feel like there are a lot of people that are concerned about keeping it going. There's a lot of energy and a lot of ambition here to maintain it. There are, I mean, a lot of people are just really motivated to support it. I mean, stores like MagBig, Cassie Ridgway is the owner of that, and she's incredibly ambitious, incredibly active. There's Chris Medargento, who does a line of knitwear called Pino, but he's also like a master networker. I mean, it's just like you give him 5 minutes, he's shaking hands with the mayor. Like and he's really motivated to try to figure out what this design community needs to keep going and to maintain itself as one of the leading cities as far as sustainable local manufacturing goes. So there's a lot of interest right now, so I have a lot of hope for it.
Right. Do you think that, like, things like, I mean, where do you think that people, like, the attention and the exposure of Portland comes from? Is it getting written up in the New York Times, or is it when people from here are on Project Runway or something like that? Or what do you think is the sort of...
I think it's all above. I mean, I've always been kind of... Specifically with Project Runway, I've always kind of been like kind of grumpy about it because it is, you know, it's reality TV. It's totally, it's kind of gross.
It's more about the drama than the actual design.
Well, I mean, it is like, I don't watch a lot of TV, but for reality TV, as far as I've seen it as it goes, it at least showcases people who have a technical skill. And there aren't very many reality TV shows that do that. So that's nice. But I don't know. I kind of stopped complaining about it for this past season when Michelle was on it, our most recent local winner. I was just like, I don't know. I'm just going to stop squawking about it. If designers want to do this, it is a ton of exposure. Yeah. They win, they get a bunch of money. It's not my place to like tell people what to do with their careers. And like, you know, maybe it's not the way that I would envision happening in like the most hippest way, but it is broadcasting, you know, year after year, the fact that, you know, a city that was so not associated with fashion for so much of its history, like people, especially young people that are like watching this show and, you know, in their minds, they're like, oh no, designers come from Portland all the time. Like Portland has tons of design talent because they've won the show like four times out of 11.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, and it's all of the above. And, you know, those kids are maybe they're reading the New York Times. I don't know. I wasn't when I was their age, but you know, it just hits different demographics. Maybe their parents are reading the articles in the New York Times. Although, you know, most of that I think thus far is concentrated more on our food culture than.
That's true. I think so too.
But there are a lot of parallels.
Yeah. Yeah. That's also a good point. So what's, I mean, if someone was coming into town or if someone called you up from wherever and said, you know, what's the must-see fashion thing in Portland, you know, like destination, what would you tell them right now?
Like a store?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I may actually say Mag Big because they are probably the most vocal and the most dedicated to just local designs. And they do the Alley 33 fashion show. I mean, they're really, really active. Cassie, who I just mentioned, Cassie Ridgway, you know, I think she's like president of the Hawthorne Business Association or something like already. And she's, you know, been in that store for a year. She's just a real go-getter and a real advocate. So that might be one, but I mean, just in terms of retail experience, I mean, God, there are so many good ones. Frances May is amazing. Una's amazing. Odessa's amazing. Canoe. I mean, there's really, the list goes on. I mean,
yeah.
Oko Gallery is this tiny little place in Northwest. Like, there are so many, like, really personal, like, Sword and Fern. Like, I honestly, they'll just keep popping in my head indefinitely. Just, like, really interesting people who've carefully curated these, like, often tiny spaces with just, like, it just really makes shopping this magical, like, exploratory, like, whoa, what's this kind of experience, which is super neat.
Yeah.
Stand-up comedy. I mean, there's so many. So many.
Do you think... I'm going to shift gears a little bit here.
Okay.
When you're looking back... I guess I'm not really shifting gears. Like you had mentioned Seaplane. I mean, that seems so long ago now when, I don't know if you meant even when it was on Belmont or when it was in Northwest, but like when it was on Belmont and they would do fashion shows on the corner, for me, that was the first time that I ever thought, oh my gosh, there's a fashion thing here.
Yeah.
Was that your experience or was there... Did you feel like other things predated that? Because that just sort of really hit me.
Yeah. I mean, I was still in college when Seaplane first opened. So, you know, me and my friends would go to the Seaplane on Belmont, but it was just sort of like astronomically expensive to us. It was just forget about it. But, you know, we would like drop in there just to gawk at stuff a little bit. So you know, their early incarnation was a little bit ahead of my time. I mean, I was going downtown a lot. I was like super into the vintage scene downtown. I was doing a lot of that stuff, but I just, you know, was not prepared to get into boutique shopping at all. Mm-hmm. So definitely my memories of enjoying it and spending more time there and covering it more heavily were when it was on 23rd. But yeah, definitely. I mean, I was kind of a snob, or like really a snob. Like when I first moved here, mm-hmm. I was like normal teenager, would wear like jeans and stuff, whatever. I went to school in San Francisco and I came here and I was just like appalled at how people dressed. And, mm-hmm. and so I was like, this is unacceptable. Like, and I just went to the thrift store and I just bought like all skirts and dresses. I wore skirts, dresses, heels, red lipstick every day for like well past college. I don't even remember. I was like in my late 20s before I ever wore jeans again. I was just like somebody has to raise the bar, like this is gross. Like yeah. So I was really excited to discover Seapoint. You know, I was just like, oh my God, because I, you know, had just like most of the country, kind of looked down on Portland as fashionless or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
Fashion free. So when you're, you know, like you've got, you know, pages to fill and things to write for the Mercury, how do you stay on top of all of the stuff that's happening right now? Do you rely on like press releases or tips or just email or just like getting out there and pounding pavement?
It's really all of the above. Like we're lucky, especially a lot more than when the Mercury used to get forgotten a lot in its early days. And, mm-hmm. you know, like it's sort of like we almost like weren't even allowed in City Hall. I don't think like, you know, we had to definitely earn a lot of respect or even just like repetition to get people to even like remember that we existed to some extent.
Yeah.
Now it's a lot easier. Now, you know, pretty much everybody is sending us a press release or an email. I use Facebook extensively.
Okay.
That Facebook has been a huge, more than any other social media, has been hugely helpful to me on a professional level. And it's also just getting out there. I mean, I'm like resting a little bit on my laurels now because I feel like I don't have to as much, but for years and years and years and years, I literally went to like everything I possibly could, every trunk show, every store opening, every first Thursday that a store hosted, and just like met people. And then I would socialize with those people. And it's just ingratiating yourself in a community. And I don't want to sound like those friendships are inauthentic or anything, because they're absolutely not. But, you know, part of where I was going was directed by mm-hmm. my area of coverage. So yeah, it's all of the above. And then you become friends with them on Facebook, and then they send you invites for your event.
Right.
And that's just like getting a press release.
And it goes right in your calendar. So how do you, and then this is maybe a little geeky, but how do you keep track of all this stuff? Do you have just like a big folder, or do you have like a Google Docs in your computer? Or?
No, I don't know what you mean by stuff, but
like
I don't really have a database.
Do you have any sort of, do you just kind of every time a thing comes in, like an event or something like that, you just decide, are we going to write about this or not? And then just move forward with it?
Well, I mean, a lot of the stuff that I get is like, oh, we're having a sale, or which is just, you know, something I'll just do a quick blog post. Sometimes you know, I don't have time, or I don't actually get a press release or something. I'll see it on Twitter and I'll just retweet it from the Mercury fashion account. And like, sorry, that's all I could do for you, you know?
Yeah.
But every week I have to assess everything that I know about that's going on. We all do on all our sections, and we have to make a decision. Okay. Like, what am I writing my column about this week? So
as far as social stuff, is it kind of just Facebook and Twitter? Do you use Pinterest a lot?
I like Pinterest, but I don't really use it on a professional basis. I kind of, I I haven't had time to recently, but historically, one of my favorite things to do to just completely chill out, like brainless relaxing, is to go online window shopping at like all the fancy online stores. And, you know, and Pinterest is similar to that, of just kind of like magpie making note of things that your eye is attracted to. So I really enjoy it, but, I don't have a ton of time for it. And I know that there's like, everybody's like really crazy about social media, everything. I know that's like a lot of what you do, but for me personally, I really feel like I'm getting to the point where I'm like editing of like, you know what? Twitter professionally is a lot more useful to me than it is personally. So I've like, frankly, kind of abandoned my personal account, and I'm just using it for Mercury fashion stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, like I like Instagram, but you know, I feel like that's pretty intimate, and so it's just like my personal account. Mm-hmm. And you know, Pinterest is nice if I have a free evening to drink wine and cruise the internet, which I wish I did more often.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I feel like everybody thinks they need to be on everything and do everything. And I don't know. I think that the pendulum is kind of swinging, or you just need to figure out like what's actually working for you.
What's important.
Yeah. And for me personally, for whatever reason, like Facebook happens to be the ideal. It's like what I use the most that works for me both personally and professionally in a way that, mirrors the degree of comfort I have with those lines being blurred in my everyday life.
Right. What do you like to read as...
I don't have time to read.
Okay. No. I mean, like, as far as, like, periodics, you know, periodical things.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Besides...
No, I'm kidding. Harper's is my favorite.
Okay.
I consider it an accomplishment each month if I can make my way through Harper's. I've definitely for a long, long time been more interested in nonfiction than fiction in general. I have a specific weak spot for biographies. But I honestly, it's pretty shameful. Like most of the reading I do is I read the internet.
Have you read, what's the last good biography that you read?
It was the Keith Richards.
Okay. Did you like that?
Yeah, but the guitar parts were like a little too nerdy for me.
Oh, okay. I haven't read it.
If you don't actually play guitar, it's like really technical kind of, and kind of made my eyes glass over a little.
Yeah. When you talked about first discovering like Seaplane or whatever, you talked about kind of your fashion style then. How has your style changed personally since then?
Well, I definitely have way more pairs of jeans
than
I just in the past couple years. I don't know why. I think that I used to like be more. I probably still have this influence, but I think I used to be more influenced by like rocker style, you know, like a lot of like black pants and boots. And, you know, I still have this pair of motorcycle boots that I've had literally for 13 years. That, like I used to wear like every day, and now I wear them like once every 3 months. just kind of more like, I don't know. I always say like, I'm like dressing more like a lady now. Like I have boucle in my closet now. Like I don't think I even knew what boucle was 10 years ago. You know what I mean? So, you know, a little bit more grown up, but
yeah,
I'm so eclectic that I've always been a little bit all over the place. So it's hard to say.
Yeah. So as also a, the Mercury's a film critic.
Mm-hmm.
What have you seen recently that was thrilling or that you're really excited to see? Or, you know, does your taste in music go to like biographical or, I mean, I'm sorry, movies?
Oh, movies? No, movies, no, I'm all over the place.
Okay.
I tend to, I don't know why, they stopped sending me to as many romantic comedies as they used to. But I think that there are kind of, I don't know, I feel like there was like a rash of romantic comedies a couple years back or something.
Yeah.
But I tend to get steered towards like a lot of foreign films and documentaries. So yeah, in a way, I mean, I do have a lot of love for documentaries.
Yeah.
And I actually, right before I came here, I was watching the new Sarah Polley documentary.
Okay.
The Stories That We Tell, which is, it is autobiographical. It's about her finding out that her father is not who she thought she was, thought he was, blah, blah, blah. Which was really good. I mean, I literally was watching that an hour ago.
Okay.
For work, and that was good. But then I also adore any movie that I don't have to review.
Uh-huh.
Like, it's kind of sad. Like, you can take me to any piece of crap film, and I will be like, that was awesome.
Just like the movie like, experience.
That was, yeah, I was like, that was so much fun that I just got to, like, kick back and watch a movie.
So seeing so many of these, do you have, like, a favorite theater or, you know, venue for a movie in Portland? Because I love the Living Room Theater.
I was thinking of the Living
Room
Theater.
And, like, Cinematopia is fun. But, I mean, Living Room Theater is my favorite. It's just that you rarely do you see, like, a goofy comedy there. They're art films and stuff, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I still have... I mean, when I'm just going to see a movie, just on my own or whatever, with a friend, we usually go to the Laurelhurst.
Yeah.
I mean, I love the Laurelhurst.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like my go-to, even though it's like not as fancy as a place like the Living Room.
Yeah, but you can get like your beer and your pizza or whatever, your wine.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. Yeah. I just like it there.
Do you have like a favorite? I just think, you know, if you work for something like the Mercury, you're very critical. You're very thinking about like what's cool and what's hot. So like now I'm going to ask you what the cool restaurant is or what I should try, you know?
Oh God. Well, okay. I'm going to go ahead and plug my new neighborhood spot.
Okay.
Which is Old Salt.
Okay.
That just opened up on Northeast 42nd in Alberta, which is in the neighborhood I just bought a house in. So everybody should go there and that neighborhood should blow up.
That's
my
right.
Property value should go up.
Yeah.
But it's actually a really cool place. It's sort of not fully formed yet from what I understand right now. It's like a deli butcher. They do all their butchering and stuff in-house. It's the same guys that do Grain and Gristle.
Nice. Okay.
But they have a restaurant and a bar. And frankly, I haven't actually like gone there for a meal yet. I've just like gone there to have a couple glasses of wine mm-hmm. before I leisurely walk the half block to my house.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, it's very nicely decorated. The people who work there are like really enthusiastic about the concept. It's one of these like uber local kind of, but it's so it's nice to have like that. And then the Spare Room, which was like our other neighborhood bar before the Old Salt opened up. So it's a diverse little block there.
We're in the Foster Powell neighborhood and there's not a lot of that. There's like, you know, they're all like sports bars. So I will speak with the folks who opened that place and give them a suggestion for the next place to make cool.
There you go.
You know, it's hard because it's like, Foster is one of those angular streets, like Sandy. Mm-hmm. They're doomed.
Oh.
There's just nothing you can do for those streets.
Well, I mean, Sandy has got some stuff. They just had Church open. Have you heard about Church?
No, where's that?
It's right in that kind of dead zone. It's like, I want to say maybe 24th or so.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of
okay.
Between all the stuff that's on 28th and like...
Kind of by where Gleason kind of starts off of Sandy, sort of.
Yeah, near there, near where that...
That is a dead zone. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, but then that like food... complex thing Ocean mm-hmm. went in right there.
Okay.
And I actually haven't been to Church yet, but I have friends and it's like supposed to be like Northeast Sandy's answer to Dig a Pony. It's like supposed to be super hip and good food and blah blah blah.
Wasn't that where
it's where that Thai food place used to be.
Okay. I'm thinking of like a dive bar there that I used to go to long ago. But,
there's Kate.
The Sandy Hut. Is it by the Sandy Hut, kind of?
It's further up. It's further towards 28th.
Okay.
But the Sandy Hut is still there.
Okay, it is. Yeah. See, full disclosure, I have kids now. So I don't do that kind of stuff.
Party's over.
Anymore. Yeah, that's right. The party's been over for years. I can only read about the divey and fun things. But you know, it's really, it's in here, the satisfaction.
Yeah.
So here's my last big pitch to you. As the managing editor of the Mercury, what advice would you give to someone who wants an awesome job like that?
Jeez, I was really not strategic at very much, mm-hmm. I guess. Here's the best I can answer is that when I started and when it occurred to me to even approach the Mercury, it was something where I had a really clear idea that I could do that. I was like, I can do what these people are doing and I can help. I can help them. I can do it at least as well as they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And I'm fresh out of school. Like, maybe I'll even get better at it than whatever. I'm not going to say that because my boss is still my boss. But, it was just a question of paying attention to the people I was around and listening to what they complained about. And, you know, Julianne Shepherd was like totally complaining about having to do the music listings and blah, 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 blah. Well, hey, guess what? I can do that for you. And I tell interns this all the time. Like, this is like how you just kind of like have to get people who are doing something that you want to be doing and listen to the parts of their job that they complain about doing. And then if you can do those things for them and ideally even learn to appreciate the value of those tasks, you will be more likely to find yourself indispensable to them.
Yeah. You just got to get a foothold, kind of. And I mean, it helps when you're, I don't know, you know, in your 20s or something where you have that enthusiasm.
It's curiosity more than anything else. I mean, I kind of what I feel like really propelled me is that I was just super open-minded and just sort of like, point me in a direction and I'm going to go.
Right. Now I picture you just sitting back in your leather Eames chair, kicking up your feet and just ordering them around. Is that pretty accurate?
No, it's like a really shitty swivel desk chair that it's like the upholstery is ripped and the cushions hanging out. But
cool. Well, Marjorie, thank you so much for coming down and taking the time to chat with me today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for the invitation.
Awesome. Hi, Dan.
Hi, Ray.
How are you?
Doing all right.
Cool.
Had a good long weekend.
Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, it was a Memorial weekend.
Memorial Day. How are you feeling? Feeling good?
Good, good, good. So as you already know,
mm-hmm.
the audience might not. I got into the Allman Brothers. I think this happened last Tuesday.
And I am afraid that this has bled over into my ears.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I don't
mean
that. I mean, I have also become obsessed with the Allman Brothers. I've been listening to them nonstop for like 4 or 5 days.
That's I never really got into them. So this is all new to me. I find it odd that I hadn't, but I think it's because they kind of, a certain percentage of their output sounds just kind of like bar blues.
Mm-hmm.
And I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that. But the other like 3/4 of it is brilliant.
And you can skip those when
right.
you're listening to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I went to a boarding school in New England in the mid-90s, so it was like required listening.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's like Fish, Allman Brothers. It just
yeah, sure. And we just recently got Eat a Peach here. I think that's what reminded me of them. Although I have to say that when I would put in like Eagles in Pandora, the Allman Brothers would come up, you know. contemporaries. Contemporaneous mix.
So I decided to splurge, and I got the deluxe edition of Fillmore East, which, as I understand it, is probably their best work.
What, like 700 hours long, that one?
It's... So the original is 73 minutes, but I got the deluxe, which I swear it must be 2 hours long, yeah.
Yeah.
It's got like all, you know...
Is that like two nights? Is that... or...
Well... The problem is that the guy who originally edited it, so of course I read up.
Sure.
So the guy who originally,
I would expect nothing less. Yeah.
The guy who originally produced the album apparently really, really mixed it, like mixed different nights into one track and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
What's amazing is how precise their performance is. Like, if you didn't hear the audience at the beginning and ends, you could mistake it for a studio album. It's that well done, and their timing is like so good that there's a version of One Way Out on Eat a Peach. Mm-hmm. Love that track. Although it just stops short of being like a bad blues one. It's clearly, you know, a blues, you know.
It's in the doorway.
Yeah. Right. One foot in the door. But it's so well done. And the thing is, I didn't realize that was different than the version that's on my deluxe edition of Fillmore East. It's a different night. But I must have heard both versions like a dozen or two times before I realized that it was different. Actually, I only noticed when I read it. And then I was like, listening closely to it, I was like, that's crazy. They're just slightly different. Like the solo is slightly different or...
Wow.
He yells, clap your hands at a slightly different moment, or, you know, or something like that. Like, it's so close. It's so precise. Some bands are like that.
When you got two drummers on the stage, you better be pretty tight.
That's like, a good point, yeah. And two guitarists playing essentially
right, the
solos
same
in tandem. Yeah, that's, I mean, for the, you know, image that they had publicly, they sure were musically tight. You know, I don't know. Great album.
But that, I feel like that is the image that, or at least for me, like that's the understanding I have of like a lot of those 70s bands that were like their musicianship was really high, but their reputation is that they were kind of sloppy and a lot of drugs, mm-hmm. a lot of alcohol. Mm-hmm. Like they could still, like no matter what state they were in, go on stage and play. Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember like seeing something about like Clapton at the height of his drinking was like playing shows lying down. And still, like, being amazing.
You
know?
Wow.
like, he couldn't stand, but he could still play a solo that would, you know.
Yeah, huh.
Be a Clapton solo kind of thing.
Maybe I'll get into that next. Probably not.
After Cream, it's just, you don't want to.
No, agreed. So since I read the whole Wikipedia entry, I wanted
sure.
to share.
Keep going.
This quote. I'm going to read verbatim from Wikipedia. Brace yourselves, super fans. Normally, the band hated being photographed. The cover shows them displaying terminal boredom. However, during the session, Dwayne spotted a dealer friend, raced over and grabbed a bag of contraband, then returned to his seat, discreetly clutching the stash in his lap. This cracked up the members, resulting in a memorable image. That's on the cover. They're like laughing. Apparently, it's because someone had just grabbed some drugs. I thought that was a nice little story.
Like contraband is so vague.
Contraband, yeah. Like, was it not weed? Like, yeah, who knows? Yeah. So you probably don't have anything to add. Do you have anything to add to
about the Allman Brothers,
or like what you've been listening to, or is there a particular album that you go to? Your go-to Allman Brothers album? Because this is the only one I really know.
No, you know, like when I was a teenager, I had the CD box set, like the four disc box
okay.
set. So I don't really think of it as albums, you know, like they're
right.
a band that I think like Eat a Peach existed as an album. It was like an LP like that I understood. But
as a receptacle for weed.
Exactly.
We had this conversation.
Yeah, like I've never seen the actual LP cover clean and in good condition. Like it's always filthy. It's always tattered. Like even when you see it
yeah,
in shops, like
true.
You, it's just like it's beat up. Like people love that album.
Yeah,
treat it well.
Yeah,
but yeah. No, I. They're songs. Like I think of them as they're like a band that I think of as like makers of songs, not mm-hmm. so much albums.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
The that's probably an unfair thing, but that's just...
No, I mean, it's weird that the...
It's like a slot they fit into in my head.
I mean, this was... This concert was not long before Dwayne died, so it kind of seems like that's as far as they got with the... You know, like, he didn't even really write the hits that they ended up having, like Ramblin' Man or whatever.
That's Dickie Betts,
Dickie right? Betts?
Yeah. Oh, Dickie.
Chuckle. Yeah, probably the reason that I've already memorized that album top to bottom, the live one, is because... When we were at the coast this weekend for 3 nights, we had no internet. The internet in the hotel was a fiction, a farce.
Oh, you were meant to have internet, but just like wasn't...
Oh, yeah, the signal showed up. It's just no packets came through. And if you know about packets, as you do, you need packets. You don't know it, but you need them. And then same for the cell. Like occasionally I get that little O, the fearsome O. Mm-hmm. Like it's like below 3G. It's like you are like in the, you know... You set back. You're back with that guy walking on the beach and with that giant phone, you know, with the briefcase connected to it. That's like the technology I was using. So there was no way I would be able to download anything. Unfortunately, I just purged my phone because it got full. And the only thing that... Because like with... So if you're using iCloud or whatever, Music Match, whatever that is, it downloads the album as you buy it. So of course, in the last week, I bought that album. So at the coast, I had that album. Nice. And my great little Jawbone Jambox, whatever, yeah. Which was great. Then it's like, you know, but it was just that album. And I think everyone was getting a little edgy by Monday morning.
Your 7-month old was like, no more of this.
Yeah, it's just, come on. And she'd get grumpy. I think she just started teething because of this album. But, it was enjoyable for the first 48 hours.
Sure.
And man, I was just listen to that one track, One Way Out, on headphones a couple of times. It's just so good. So good.
I like Whipping Post a lot.
Okay.
For that reason.
That's
headphones
a good
one. Headphones kind of help. Headphones track.
Yeah, that's a... Oh, I was just looking around.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. I'll check that out again too, though. the other thing that I did this weekend, and I'll share this with you too, which we'd been laughing about all week, is I read Inferno by Dan Brown, by renowned author Dan Brown.
You're gonna put the link to that Guardian review in the show notes for anyone who's listening to this to enjoy. If they haven't read that,